recording, and let's get to the business for today. So that's my main question for today. You had the orientation lecture for Agile given by Ville last year, video recording for that pretty basics of Agile. You have had some discussion on Agile before. I'm sorry, I'm going to revise pretty much the same things a few times again today, but my plan is to dig a bit deeper to understand the overall thinking behind this whole Agile movement, and I'm aiming to answer the question from a few different points. So I'm not doing this very scientific way in that sense that I'm not going to give you a single definition for Agile for the question that you read typically in an academic article. You have some brief definition. But I'm answering this from a few different viewpoints during the lecture. So again, some main points for the beginning of the history. Like I've said also me in this course before, when we discussed about processes, I said that I referred to Agile and promised to come back to this, that Agile didn't come from nothing on scratch. It was some kind of reaction to the things that already existed at that point of the history. So what we had there, we had already decades of history in systems development. We discussed in my introductory lecture about software crisis in the 60s. The same issues were already on the table in the 60s, and they already had some history before that in systems development. So there's a rather long history already before no one started to discuss about Agile, using that term. We had different kind of methods and long decades of development of different kind of methods in the field. And the whole Agile thinking and discussion came, the arguments for that came in contrast to that history. That's something we have to understand here. So some of the critiques, we come back to this later today, of the original Agile discussion was that in the previous methods, there was a lot of emphasis in upfront design, and the practices produced a lot of documentation, which was regarded in many cases needless extra bureaucracy, and then the obvious problems with waterfall models and one other so on and so on. Then there was we discussed about the this in the process lecture. There was, I don't know if anyone else uses this term, but I put there, I call this here as process thinking movement. It's not specific to our field. It relates to the more general discussion on management overall in different fields in the industry. This kind of movement on quality management systems, process, defined processes and such like things. It arises in 80s strongly and so that was background actually for that CMM model and that kind of things. But this was a strong movement in the field in the 90s. A lot of discussion about defined processes and from that kind of background, what we already had at then came Agile Manifesto 2001, which is still usually the reference point when we have to speak about Agile on a general level. Okay, what happened then? We are not going there yet in this lecture much, but then after the early years of Agile discussion, after the manifesto, the discussion has moved on to some different sub-questions. And then we could add lean DevOps and so on things. That's what we are. It's a bit related issues, which are the hot topics of today, but this whole Agile movement is in the background of those discussions. Okay, there is a lot of different kind of terminology around Agile. We are not going to tackle all of those here, just some, and we are not going much to any technical details on how to implement some specific Agile methods in practice, but we stay more at a general level. But there is a lot of different terms, and different methods has their own terminology based on some background. And there, if you read the material in the field, you must understand pretty much of different terminology, usually specific to the specific method in discussion. So there are different kind of some words about this later, but this is just a list collected by Mauri Leppänen, who previously had this course before he retired. Just some lists, there are more, but some list of different methods which call themselves as Agile. The red ones are, I think, the best known ones and widespread. So, but there is a lot, different variation, and not all of them speak about the same thing, actually. But, okay, a couple of words later. Okay, a couple of facts as an introduction style. And there is currently, it seems to be, annual survey. Some big organization does this. It's US-based survey, but a lot of Europeans and other global organizations participate. I think this version, it was published last year, but I'm not sure if the material was from 2017 or a bit earlier. And I didn't go to the details. I don't know who the respondents are, but there were thousands of respondents. That's not the point here. But what came out here, 94% of the respondents say that their organization use Agile practices. But at the same time, they said that 60% of the teams in their organizations, on average, didn't apply Agile. So almost all the organizations have tried Agile, but not throughout the whole organization. So for some teams, but there are some parts of the organizations which do things more traditionally. Okay, that's the general conclusion of that. Okay, that's just a number. If you check different surveys, different sources, you get a bit different number, but you see the trend. It's still, the discussion is still on. There is a lot of discussion on Agile from different perspectives, still both in industry and in academia. But still, this comes to the question for today, that what this Agile in this discussion is. Okay, a couple of more facts from that survey from the beginning. So top three reasons for Agile adoption, why these organizations take Agile, their goals for it. Okay, first and third speak a bit about same thing but different perspectives. So time to market, or whatever you call it, time matters. That was the number one. The third was increased productivity. the second in between, enhance ability to manage changing. So changing something. So this speaks about some beliefs behind, at least, that these organizations believe that it helps to manage changes. It helps to do, how to put it, what would be the proper word to describe it? Anyway, you get the point. I'm not finding the right word. They have beliefs that it enhances productivity and helps them to get the delivery time in time to market. And again, there was asked also at what did you really get about it? And so I don't know what the conclusion should be about this, but number one was changing management. Change management, yes. At least then, that is in both. Okay, let's go forward. Total blackout. Don't know what else I was going to say about that. Wasn't so important. Okay, let's come back to this for a minute. This was your first assignment. This is just as an example. I ask you to find some critique against process-driven development or whatever you call it. There's some good points there in the assignments I already raised. There is a huge number of different perspectives you can get for it. So, but here are just a few that comes to my mind first that relate to this agile discussion here. Again, that's our point for us today. So maybe the first one, that this process work, this is the main argument for this whole agile discussion, that part that relates to the process essays, is that this process works if you take quality management system, CMM kind of framework which we discussed, something like that, and implemented by the book. It means a lot of work. It's a lot of work to invest in planning, defining whatever it includes, have a lot of meetings and planning and discussion. If you have a large organization, to integrate goals of the whole organization and different stakeholders and so on, you can imagine. And so you have to document, you have to implement it, you have to check that you really institutionalizing means that you check that you really have the defined processes in practice and follow up that and activities that you use for ensuring that actual practice in the organization. So the point is that it's huge work. And you really must see the benefit out of it. And this relates to the scaling, to downscaling to the smaller organizations. So if you do it by the book, actually in very small organizations, you can never do it by the book. It's a big investment to do it, let's say, some quality management system. And in a small organization, it would absolutely cost too much. Okay, like the second point is these kind of frameworks were originally used for large and complex settings. It's a fair question. What about the other business we have in the field? Okay, this is... Okay, maybe I'm going to do this short. There could be a lot of discussion, but mainly to super heavy processes. This was the perception in the 2019 when there was a lot of discussion already about these process frameworks, and they implemented. Misunderstanding refers here, for example, they took CMM, read the manual, and didn't really understand it. So their goal was to, this refers to the last point, so the organization may had an external goal to have some CMM label in some external appraisal, they call it in the CMM system. You have this kind of external assessment for the organization, so the actual goal for the assessment for was kind of show up. Yeah, you have to show to the external assessors that you have the processes in place and so on. So what this meant in practice, in many times they defined super heavy processes to be sure that they passed this assessment, whatever it is in different cases. And in CMM settings, it often was that the actual requirements of CMM wasn't so high, but they wanted to make sure and plan super heavy processes around it. And so they kind of harmed themselves. And the last point there is that, you see, in this, there are contradictory goals. Sometimes, if you want to show up for some external assessment, it's a different goal from internal process improvement. And there are some studies about this, that depending on the goal, you get what you aim for. So if you aim for external assessment, you may pass it, but it doesn't help you in practice in your own organization. So. But if your main goal is your own process improvement, that's usually what you get. Better processes, more effective practices, and so on. Okay, let's go get forward from this. It's not the point for today. But just as an example, we get back to this Agile. There was this kind of critique against strong practices in the field at the point. And they formulated the Agile manifesto. And this way, there were these four values. Bill already went this through quickly in the video lecture. But the way to put this through, put this together was to create this kind of contradiction. So we value individuals and interactions over processes and tools. And this kind of statement come and for value comes from that critique I just quickly went through. So the important point here, I say it first, is that many times when you hear references or read to the Agile Manifesto, they forgot the last line here in the red box. So their original idea wasn't to exaggerate, it wasn't to kind of exaggerate this contrasting. They didn't meant to say, even originally, that let's forget all the processes. Let's focus on just informal interaction between people and so on. So, but this is just emphasis in the. So, and the statement, the purpose of the statement was just to emphasize what is more important. They understand that processes may be important, yes, but we emphasize individuals more. Again, working software, documentation, and other part of the critique. Current practices then, in the 90s, let's say, they tend to produce a lot of documentation. You see some point in that, but the point here is balancing between those. Let's not have such practices that produce needless documentation. That's the point here. Let's emphasize working software instead of documentation. That's what matters more. And then again, customer collaboration over contract negotiation. Okay, at some point, maybe Thursday, we can discuss a bit about this in more detail. But that means if you follow this kind of agile values and principles, you don't need strict contracts. You build the cooperation between the customer and trust. If you have fixed contracts, it's based on pretty throughout requirements, and you build on contracting based. Okay, this is the whole point. Let's not have fixed contracts if we can avoid it. Let's build in this and trust, and do it highly iterative way, and negotiate this requirements again with the customer each sprint if we use Scrum terminology. But in the real world, we can't avoid contracts in many cases. That's the fact, and I believe they also understood that when they wrote Agile Manifesto. We need contracts for many reasons, but let's value this negotiation more whenever it's possible. And again, responding to change over following a plan. So that original plan upfront in the beginning, that doesn't matter so much. But it's more important to be open to changes over time. Okay, you have heard these values many times before this, but I wanted to use some time to go this through again and to emphasize that. Remember, it was the state of the practice then, some previous habits, discussion, and such like background before that, and this was kind of statement was like reaction to the history before that. Then, okay, we went through some of these again in the lecture. Let's get through this quickly again to revise some things. Like Agile Manifesto includes these 12 principles that don't tell specifically how to do things in many cases, but they are a bit. In a bit more detail description, how they think about the previous values. It's so highest priority is to satisfy the customer through early and continuous delivery of valuable software. So customer satisfaction early and continuous delivery. Okay, this refers to short sprint, highly iterative model. Welcome change in requirements, even late in development, and so on. Deliver working software frequently. And it said here specifically from a couple of weeks to a couple of months. Okay, this is kind of ideal there. So business people and developers must work together daily throughout the project. This is more general thinking there, that there is this kind of philosophy back in the background to avoid hierarchies in the organization, to enable cooperation and collaboration, communication, often between several stakeholders. So you don't separate developers and testing people, but put them to work together all the time. That's kind of basic philosophy in the background. So, okay, build project around motivated individuals. Okay, give them support and trust. Okay, this trust is one big keyword. Here we come back to that in many cases. If we dig a bit deeper into Agile. Okay. The most efficient and effective method is face-to-face conversation, do face-to-face communication, if you only can. Okay, again, working software is the primary measure of progress. Okay, then eight, sustainable pace of development. So this seems a bit separate issue of development, but there is this kind of emphasis on not do overtime, continuous 40 hours week working time, and that kind of discussion. It's part of the whole philosophy in several agile discussions. That's what it means. So the idea is that when you do short sprints, you maintain continuous pace. This is an ideal in this thinking. You avoid the situation where you have some big delivery, let's say twice a year, and you have a huge load just before the deadline. Very rarely, but do a lot of overwork and then a lot of pressure there. Yeah. And people get exhausted and so on. And the idea of this is to avoid that kind of situation. That's why you find this idea a lot in this agile discussion. Okay, let's get forward. Technical excellence. Okay, simplicity. Make things as simple as possible. So don't waste your time. Focus on what's essential. This relates to the do not do unnecessary documentation issue, for example. Okay. Then self-organizing teams and the idea that the best things overall, to generalize this, comes from self-organizing teams instead of someone bossing all the time and telling them what to do. Regular intervals, team reflects on how to become so. It's kind of self-improvement of the team. Okay. Ville showed in the video lecture already a bit different table In the literature, there has been different kind of contrasts like this. I must say first, this is from the early years. I'll come back to this point later. So this is a simplification that let's take those values as they were written. And often this means that we consciously contrast these things. Let's take them in a pure form and interpret them in an extreme way. And that means this agile column here. And then let's take plan-driven methods and again, often in a bit stupid, simplified, exaggerated way, and put that in the right column just to show what could be the differences between the two. And to get started, I wasn't going to go to details here, but the first thing there is the primary goal is to respond to change for agile, plan-driven. There is predictability, stability in such like environments where you need those. In agile, it's for that, okay, it's for smaller teams. If you look at the principles we just went through quickly, most of them speak about single teams. And most of the methods that has been presented for agile, they describe some practices for a single team, not very big size. And then, so based on this contradiction, okay, you can think agile is for small, plan-driven is for larger. Then environment, if you have this kind of, it's called turbulent, if you have a lot of changes, it's not critical, and it's like you can try agile. Kind of so-called greenfield projects is also often in discussion with this. Then if you have more stable, you can't allow change, use plan-driven. And about communication in agile, it said that you have a lot of tacit knowledge, plan-driven methods, you have documents and knowledge. Okay, that makes sense. If you don't document, it's tacit, and so on. In terms of requirements, you may have, this is an extreme form, you may have in agile, informal user stories. Okay, this doesn't go with all the agile methods in the literature. Some of them are very formal with at least functional requirements. But then this is the purpose of the table is to contrast again. In agile, informal requirements and negotiate them again during the project in plan-driven. You have formal requirements in the beginning and you follow them. Later, you have very formal system to change requirements if you have to. Okay, development, same goes to design. Also, the idea is that you don't waste too much time in agile for upfront design, but allow changes during the path. You do some design each sprint. Iteratively, and there is an idea that the whole thing kind of emerge from that kind of iterative development. So in plan-driven, you use more time for upfront design and documenting. test is this, the Agile talks about test-driven kind of method to write tests before the actual code, and then, and that's in a simple form, that's the testing in Agile. In plan-driven, you have document and test plans and procedures, and it's more throughout, more documented and so on. And role of the customer, it's critical. If you follow the Agile principles, you have in Agile, you have co-located, okay, this depends on bit the method, what is the defined role of the customer, but many times it's thought that it's ideal if you have co-located customer which you can negotiate with anytime you want, regularly during the process. So actually customer is sometimes seen as an integral part of the development team, but in the kind of the stupid form of plan-driven, if you take it to an extreme, you negotiate with the customer when you do the requirements and contracts for the rest of the project, and then forget the customer and try to deliver what the customer wants in the end. And then developers, okay, there has been some idea in the discussions that Agile is based on skilled and highly motivated people. When you have Excel, so to make it simple, you can use, if you take this idea, you can use Agile if you have highly skilled people, you can give them more responsibility. If you have more junior developers, you need more processes, defined practices to help them to do the work. That's the idea of this kind of contrasting. Okay, let's go on from this. So again, you can look the contrasting a bit this way. This is again Barry Bain et al. They presented, this is note from 2003, a couple of words of that later. Based on the previous contrasting, they present this kind of five-scale tool to evaluate project and environment. So what kind of people you have, how critical the project is, how big the project is, what kind of culture is in the organization, and how much you can allow changes during the project, dynamism says. And kind of scale, yeah, so the less you have all of this, basically, the more proper agile might be for your case in this contrast again. So the whole this kind of contrasting, okay, if I see the literature in the field, I see it mostly in the first years of Agile discussion from 2000 to Agile Manifesto to 2005, 6, something like that. So the whole that kind of contrasting we discussed, okay, there is something that relates to the Agile Manifesto and basic principles, but if you see the literature today, there is very little discussion about that anymore. The basis for that contrasting was that let's take Agile like this and compare it to something else. And the problem was that nobody knew very clearly what that Agile was in the, or if it was defined, it was defined in some very extreme form that nobody does or very few do in practice, or vice versa. Okay, I said something about this briefly in the end of the last lecture. Like this kind of, if you take a look at on the literature from that time, you sometimes find there kind of very stupid contrasting on the things. Okay, there was some point for that in that point of the history, but yeah, but you saw something like this. If you speak for a child, you kind of present your own style of doing that compare that to some stupid way of doing waterfall. So you present the parties as these kind of extremes. So if you do this, you present waterfall as once only waterfall, no iterations. You produce a lot of unnecessary documents. You do all the requirements in the beginning, do not change afterwards. You have a lot of defined processes which nobody follows, or they are super heavy to follow, take too much time, it's frustrating, no changes allowed, and you have working software in the end, no iteration. Okay, this is the picture you paint about the traditional or vice versa. Agile was presented often in the form of this kind of simplification, in the extreme form, that it's only for small, highly skilled teams. You must do only face-to-face communication. Absolutely no unnecessary documents which don't directly help you to produce the software. Okay, no processes, you do it wild and free, just empower the skilled team to do the things however they want. And you do very little design in the beginning, just start coding and do the work. Okay, you get the point. This comparison is not fair for either of the parties in the discussion. So, just side comment. You still can see in the literature from the very recent years. It's at least unfair reference to the waterfall model. This is the paper that originally presents waterfall model by Royce from 1970. It doesn't speak about waterfall. The name was put there later. He doesn't say that he invented it. He just presented it first in the paper. At least it's regarded as the first representation of waterfall. Even that model in the 70s included some sort of iteration. But it's often misstated, misunderstood, whatever, still in the literature. So this was kind of the first part of the literature research in the field, this kind of contrasting. That was one point. So see it where agile fits in or not. And there are a couple of words of this. There are different kind of methods. Okay, one example, let's go through very quickly. How many of you have heard extreme programming? Know something about that? Just one example. You have discussed mostly about Scrum. If you have heard of something, my guess, and I'm not going through again the Scrum basics, but this is just as an example. Extreme programming, just to show you that when Scrum mostly speaks about project management level issues, extreme programming is a bit different. And it's more on development and more technical focus here. And by the way, you must understand also, when you think about this contrasting in the early years of literature and Agile, there was not much discussion about Scrum kind of issues yet. They discussed about a bit different thing. If the people got to know about Agile, this general discussion about Agile, that extreme programming with some actually extreme ideas was the Agile method they knew in the beginning of 2000. So that was the idea when they thought about Agile, if they were for Agile or against Agile in this kind of contrasting. So they thought about extreme programming. And that's a bit different from Scrum and more abstract level project management or upper management level issues around this all. So let's go quickly through extreme programming. There is more, but it includes 12 practices. Pair programming, do programming in pairs. Planning game, it's a special type of doing planning in each iteration in the project. In them, not more about that. Test-driven development. So when you start programming, okay, the basic idea in extreme form is that always before you write a single line of code, you write a unit test for that part of the code you are planning to write. That's basic principle. That's test-driven development. Continuous integration. So the aim is to have always working software. That's an ideal that you at least, okay, it depends of course on the case, but the ideal is that at least once a day you run integration and you have working software, whatever the state of progress is with the software. Refactoring, design improvement, that's one. So the idea is related to simple design later. The extreme idea of this is that if you have a talented small team to do the work, you don't have to do much upfront design. The perfect architecture design just emerges during the project when you do this kind of test-driven coding, including pair programming style, and then you do them again and again. You do programming, then you refactor. That means that you correct something in the architecture design, the system, continuously. So you do some new feature, then you see the whole picture, the whole program, and you do some refactoring. So you do some rework if some structures need to be changed. Okay, this means refactoring shortly, and related to the simple design. No much upfront design, that the perfect designs with this philosophy emerges during the project. Just code, refactor, and so on. Okay, small releases, relates to the sort of iterations and continuous integration practices. Then idea that you have collective code ownership. So anyone, there is a principle that anyone of the team can change any part of the code. So nobody owns any part of the code. System metaphor, it's a bit complex to explain briefly. The ideal is to use metaphorical language that is easier to understand in naming, starting from naming variables or modules and whatever in the system. You have on-site customer. In extreme programming, the idea is that you have that in some other agile methods presented. You possibly don't have it all the time in the team. Sustainable base, that refers to the 40-hour week work strictly, no over hours. So most of these relate to the development practices, not so much about project management or upper-level management issues. So this is not so often used based on some surveys as it is nowadays. But some practices, yes. Okay, so maybe something that affected also the early years discussion around Agile was that this XP was the known method in the time, and there were some strong supporters of this, and which acted like this was a kind of religion. Really, they strongly supported this. Then there was in the discussions when I have read them, there was often emphasized, I don't know often, but by these heavy supporters, it was emphasized that you must fully follow all the practices, or it doesn't work. So don't adapt it, take it all 100%, take it by the book, or it doesn't work. There was this kind of belief, claim, strong claim in the system, and I don't doubt that people doubted about that in that time also, and that caused some kind of contradiction, I think, in the discussion again. So there was an extreme, the contrasting point was kind of, in an agile side, was a kind of extreme form of extreme programming. So, okay, and on. We have here the same report I referred on already about that percentage of agile adoption. Here is some spectrum of different methods used. So you see, most of the discussion is about Scrum. You see XP, I just told you about, as a separate method. It's very little used, but there was some, do I see it here, custom, okay, it's some here, report. Okay, the biggest percentage there in the right, it said that this includes both only Scrum or some combination between Scrum and XP. In some other statistics, that combination was something like, okay, it's there. It's 10% in the left bottom corner. But I doubt that those in that combination, that those 10% of the organizations implement these by the book, all of these. But they may use many of these practices. It's pretty common in the field. So Okay, this is one way to put it again. And when there are different kind of methods, here are some point that we didn't discuss about lean, and we are not going to discuss much about that. But the right picture is important here when we look. There is the bottom layer is development, then you have project management level in the middle, and then upper management executive level at the top. So in this all agile framework where we have this discussion, we have this variation. So we can talk about several different things. So we can easily fit together Scrum and XP as in the previous picture, because Scrum talks about project management mostly, and XP provides proper development practices to support that and so on. And then again, Lean supports more about the organization level, executive level thinking of this whole picture. So when we talk, the point of this all is that when we talk about agile, we may talk about maybe different things. When we talk about XP, which was the emphasis in the beginning of agile movement, it was more about the development level. And then the more time has gone, the kind of emphasis has changed to management level more. We mostly speak about Scrum and that level of practices if you see the literature, or even higher management level strategic issues and such like things are on the table currently. Okay, couple of words on this. I showed earlier, not today, but in the previous lecture, some references of Chaos Report. It's about project success and failure. They annually do the report still. This is from 2015 report. I think I used this earlier again. Okay, in addition to the statistics I've used before, they have this kind of comparison table. Agile against waterfall. Again, in the beginning we could ask, based on what we just have discussed already before, that what this agile means here, what this waterfall actually means here. But I think this definition is given by the respondents themselves, how they perceive their practices. So it's not given by the Standis group when they collect the data. But anyway, the starting point here is now, you see much, much higher success rate with agile. Without going into any details there, just some thoughts about that. Okay. First of all, I'm not only critical. I believe part of it. I just want to comment some of it. What might be the reasons to explain that huge difference between agile and waterfall in that picture? It might be that those who report that they use waterfall are those who have biggest projects in most critical fields, which are really, really high-risk projects anyway. So that might explain the part of the whole picture. But not all of it, but just to comment it first. More important this for this discussion when we focus on agile here, is the measurement of success in Chaos Report. So a successful project means that you deliver the software in time, on budget, with all planned features. And that's the critical point here. So I don't know what they think about this when they give their responses in this kind of surveys, but there is a critical difference between waterfall, if you say you do waterfall, or if you say you do agile, if you really do agile. So I don't know what they think if the agile project managers, let's say, there are different kind of stakeholders who give responses, but if you ask agile project manager that what this means, that if you do Scrum by the book, for example, what it means that you deliver all the features in time and on budget. So in pure dumb waterfall model, if we call it that, you do the specs in the beginning, and then you forget the customer, and in the end you check if you have delivered all the planned features. Okay, but in Scrum by the book, it might mean that the defined features are in the beginning of the last sprint. So to put it very simple, just a very, very simplified example of this. Let's say you have a similar size of project. You do it either dumb way of waterfall or agile, let's say typical Scrum by the book. You have 24 weeks long project. Let's not go into details. But you have 24 defined features. Maybe it's little for 24 weeks. I don't know which level you define it, but this is simplified example. In the waterfall, you do 24. You have 24 defined features and no changes allowed. They are defined in the beginning of the project. In Agile, okay, you possibly have in the beginning the same 24 defined features, but project is based on time boxing concept. That means that our major focus in project management is to limit it and in a specific time. If we have to be flexible, we can be flexible with the requirements, not the timeline. Basic idea of time boxing. So, okay, what might happen in this very simple way? Example, in the dumb waterfall, you forget the customer after the beginning. In the agile, you negotiate the requirements again after each sprint. In this example, you have 2-week sprints. So every 2 weeks, you negotiate the requirements and prioritize them again. Okay. And in the end, just example as an example, what might happen that you can't make it on time. In the waterfall version, you deliver 20 features, or in both of the versions. In this simple example, you deliver 20 features, but in waterfall version, you base them on the original prioritization in the original specs. In the agile version, you may deliver, again, 20 features, but possibly 15 of them, they're original in the beginning, known in the beginning of the project. During the project, you defined 5 new features. You threw some of the features away. Okay, this doesn't guarantee that you have end delivery that satisfies the customer. You You still didn't have 24 features when that was the original goal for the scope of the project. But I think there is better possibility that in the agile way you have maybe you already have a releasable software in hand, or at least if you don't, I think it's closer to be able to deliver than in this waterfall model, if you do it this dumb way. So, okay, this is a simple example of this. That if we come back to this success rate, okay, based on what I just explained with the basic example, I believe that some part of this success rate with agile projects really come from this. It's easily understandable that if you negotiate, if you really have the customer, which is the critical point, or it might be product owner in Scrum and terminology, you have at least the product owner. If you do product business, you possibly don't have the actual customer, and so on. It depends. Actually, but if you have the customer, product owner, whatever, to negotiate and prioritize again, and the requirements again every 2 weeks, it makes sense that it's better than if, compared to the dumb waterfall in which you forget the customer after the beginning. Okay, that's part of the picture. And the other part is just the comparison in that success measurement. It's not fair. It's if you in waterfall model, the respondents think that specs means that those specs in the beginning, and if in agile you mean the specs 2 weeks before the project ends. Okay, how this story continues, at least I would say when I looked at the literature, at least the past 10 years, the discussion has moved on. It has focused on several different specific questions and on agile. Just to mention a few of these. Okay, next time we're going to speak some of these in a bit more detail. But the whole thing nowadays is usually we come back to the agile definition. So if the early literature on agile was much about this contrasting if agile fits to some kind of project or not, then in this turn, the agile concept, when you read the papers on it, the concept of agile has a bit changed. What they mean by it, how they perceive it, all about the literature is nowadays is how to scale agile up, how to adopt it in a different settings, like the kind of initiation. Everybody wants to do agile nowadays, like we saw in the statistics. No matter, okay, this is my cynical point of view, no matter what they do in practice, they want to call it agile. But it's not so important here. The focus on the literature studies and special questions that comes, that we want to be on the left side, that's agile in terms of these values. But actually, we must have heavy processes, let's say. So if we have these heavy processes, we can't get rid of them, but we still want to be agile, what it means in practice and how we do it. So, like in this, it comes to many different viewpoints in this kind of contrast. So, those perspectives nowadays is that we are, in many cases, we have to be on the right side, but we still want to have as much the left side as we can. How can we do it in this special situation? How can we scale up? If Agile and many of the ideas presented were planned to be implemented in a small team. Okay, but how about the rest of the organization? If we have a big project, let's say I remember, okay, it wasn't Agile back then, but I remember as one random example, how many of you have used Windows 95? Okay, you still remember? Part of you. Okay, so when they did that, that was a huge change in Windows. If I remember right, I mean not, but if I remember right, they did the project for 5 years, and the size of the team was 150 people. So, just as an example, there are many different kind of examples. So better and more recent examples. But if you have that kind of project, you have many different teams. They cannot discuss face-to-face every day and so on. Okay, these are the questions. Okay, if we have this kind of big project, we cannot be on the left side in all the points, but how can we be agile still? As much the left side as we can take for this special situation. If we have big organization, what it means? Like, let's come back to this. If we have regulated environments, like you have one paper in your readings about that, our setting against, we have legislation, we have quality management systems, we have, the business requires something. We must have those, but we still want to be agile. How to do it in this context? If we have critical system and so on. Okay, some other special questions. I wanted to just comment quickly. You have these three papers now in Moodle. On Agile, they speak about some special things. Like I said, Fitzgerald et al. Paper, it's about Agile in a regulated environment. That means that you have some legislation, there are this, in the business, these quality management models and some ideas that, okay, maybe a couple of thoughts next lecture about that again. But it's about how to implement Agile in that kind of requirement in which we cannot be extremely agile in every terms as agile. Then we have a couple of papers, pretty recent papers, in a different case that helps a bit. The papers, at least the last paper, is a bit long as a paper. Sorry for that, but it helps a bit. If you understand, they are from the same case. So for this course, that's my point here, is not to learn every detail about the paper, but they are good case reports and from a bit different perspectives. Like, it's not important for you to learn the details about research design and research methodology point of view and go details about that. It's important to check that you understand what kind of organization this was, what kind of background and case was this, and then, okay, it's that related work is often worth of reading. When you look at this kind of information, it's broader, bigger picture in the field often. It's not long. Then you can skip the research setting pretty much. Then in the end, in the discussion part, there is some comments on validity and whatever of the research. That's not so important for us here. But the actual results and researchers' comment on those, there are interesting point of views from several viewpoints on Agile. So the second paper is specifically about requirements management issues. They made a huge Agile transition in Ericsson development in some specific group there. The second paper is about how this affected the requirements management practices. The second, you can find different kind of viewpoints. The second paper is generally about the transition process. So you can look two different kind of interesting viewpoints there. Some of them speak specifically about Agile. If you do specifically Agile in this kind of big organization and want to do the transformation organization-wide, not only for one or a couple of teams. But then when you read it, you see a lot of comments that relate more on general organizational change issues. So the same issues you find in any organizational change research on any field. That, for example, some comment there, if you finding that if you do organization-wide transition, big changes in any organization, you must have commitment from the management. Okay. That's not very helpful for understanding Agile specifically, but you can try to look and which of the findings are more general and which of the findings are more related to Agile. Okay, here are my last words for today. What I try to say today from some viewpoints, I hope after this you would understand some of the background for Agile. Because anything you read in the field or meet in the practice, it has some background. So if you read a paper, let's say the last paper is very recent, from the last side of the literature, you kind of understand only half of the story if you don't understand the background. Because when you read literature, okay, this relates to more popular issues also, but it's always some kind of response to some previous discussion in the field. You must understand something at some level, the previous discussion. That's why I'm starting with the basics and the background and history with Agile also. So you would understand more about what you read today in the most recent papers when you look at the material. So Agile Manifesto, it's a background. But the point here was that I tried to, from viewpoints, to answer what this whole Agile is. It refers to many different things. It may refer to Agile Manifesto, is the reference point still kind of starting point, even if it wasn't the actual start, but clear reference point in the field. So hope you understand there are variations of Agile methods. You can't compare them all at the same level. They answer a bit different question. Some are more for management, some are for developers. What was my point here? So, I have no idea. No, again. I thought something smart when I wrote my notes there. Okay, I have no idea what was my last point there in my summary, but anyway, let's end here. We're gonna go on time. I'm gonna see you on Thursday if I remember, but don't mind. Okay, now if you have something to ask, I can try to answer. No. Then let's end here for today and continue on Thursday with some more details.